May it please the court, Ron Holliger for the State of Missouri and the Missouri Ethics Commission. The bottom line in this case is, we'll start at the top, figuring I may not get to the conclusion, I'd like to leave it for the end. If the proper remedy is applied in this case to the single subject issue, then the ethics provisions in this bill, Senate Bill 844, stand. And if change of purpose is interpreted properly and consistently with the language in the Constitution, then there was never any change to the purpose of the original SB 844, and it stands as well. The underlying question on this appeal...
What if this court made a big mistake in Hammerschmidt in creating judicially a doctrine of severance that encouraged the legislature to not follow the Constitution? Has that occurred sufficient enough that the judicial doctrine of severability created in Hammerschmidt just doesn't make any sense anymore?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. The alternative is to strike the entire bill.
Right, which would require the legislature to uphold their oath to follow the Constitution.
That would. There are some weaknesses in that argument, though. First of all, there's nothing in the language of the Constitution itself that suggests that that drastic remedy should be applied. Secondly, what it does, that drastic remedy would allow someone who wanted to torpedo a bill to insert a poison pill, which they can frequently do at the amendment level, so that gives them unwarranted power. Third, it would allow, what it does is it assumes that the legislature intentionally violates the Constitution at best and is acting nefariously at worst.
Well, doesn't it assume that there are always those that legislation's kind of like football, there's always offense, there's always defense, and it encourages legislators to be diligent and vigilant as they see bills go through the process. In other words, pay attention to what's in there. If you like it, make sure that it conforms to the single subject, single purpose. And if you don't like it, then maybe you don't care if an unconstitutional bill is passed.
The alternative, and I think that alternative would finally lead to, instead of the legislature considering and passing 200 bills, let's say, in a session, that it would have to consider and pass 600 bills in a session.
Well, and also, isn't part of your argument a reliance upon Section 1.140 that permits severability?
It is. Now, and I think it applies in this situation. Moreover, if you look at, and I understand the respondent's answer to this, if you look at the original 1865 Constitution, it is obvious that what the initial drafters of this provision intended to do, or intended by way of remedy, is to sever those portions of the bill that are not reflected in the title. And in fact, that exact language was in the 1865 Constitution. Makes all the sense in the world. Don't let people tack on stuff, other subjects that are not in the title. That provision is not in the 1875 and the 1945 Constitution. It's not in many constitutions in many states. And as we pointed out in our brief, Thomas Cooley, who's the head of the famous judge on the Michigan Supreme Court and founder of the Michigan Law School, pointed out that what the 1865 Missouri Constitution said about a remedy was the common law remedy anyway. And it was unnecessary in any constitution to have that set forth as the remedy because that was the common law remedy.
How do you explain the EMS case where the amendment regarding no TIFs for a certain portion of St. Peter's be added to the EMS, the Emergency Medical Services statute? I think it was added without hearing 1 hour before the legislature closed. When that legislation was passed.
Your Honor, and I cannot remember off the top of my head whether that was a single subject or a change of purpose case. So I don't know if I can explain it without dividing it that way.
Well, it was the Adolphus Bush Wildlife Preserve.
Right.
That was being preserved from the TIF. And that was added to the EMS. And like I said, 1 hour before. No hearings, just added on. And it wasn't severed. It was just... Basically, that was the law. Of course, we upheld it under Hammerschmidt.
Well, I think what's happened in these cases is that the cases since the 1860s have said the court presumes constitutionality and gives a great deal of deference. And what some of the cases have done is led to some awkward reasoning to try to accomplish that goal, to avoid being too picky about the legislation, with the result that there's some awkwardness.
Yeah,
one of the problems, Judge Fischer, with the across-the-board severance is that assumes everybody knows where the line is. And I think as you look back at the history of this court's cases, not everybody knew what the line was or agreed where the line was.
Well, maybe the inconsistency, though, has come about because of the issue of severance. Maybe if there was no doctrine of severance, those interested in legislation would be more vigilant to make sure that they were within the range of acceptability. And the biggest problem is as judges, how do we really know why each particular legislator may have cast a vote for something that includes all sorts of different subjects, topics, and purposes?
Well, some states take testimony, and I hope we never go that way.
Me too, and I don't think the framers really thought we would have to.
No. I think what the state suggests as a remedy is a very simple one. You strike everything that's not within the title of the bill.
But you're saying that we should look at the title of the bill at the time it passed,
And the cases have been consistent in looking at that to determine what the subject is. It doesn't make any logical sense that you look at the title of the bill to determine what its final subject is, and then you look at its original title to see, what you should sever. This bill is unlike any other in any other case in Missouri. This court has never stricken a bill where the subject was clearly expressed in the title. They have never stricken the portion of the bill that is clearly expressed in the title. It's always been something added on. But in this case, ethics is the clear expression in the title.
But that wasn't the original purpose of the bill. I mean, the original purpose was procurement. So isn't that a clear violation of a change of the original purpose?
Okay. Well, I'll turn to the change of purpose provision. The change of purpose provision hasn't been applied very often, and I think because it is difficult to apply sometimes. And what's happened in many of the cases is that subject has come to mean the same thing as purpose. Subject is interested in the topic, the final results of the final bill. The other article, the change of purpose article of the Constitution, if you look at the sentences surround it, there's actually, I think, four different clauses. And it all deal with the legislative process itself, how a bill has to be titled. It has to be titled as a bill. It can't be introduced after the 60th day of the session. Can be amended in either house. And then the change of purpose. And what the state suggests is change of purpose means to discard the original purpose and move to a completely different purpose. Many bills, if we stop and think of it, have a variety of purposes. Unless you want to enter in, and if you do take that in a very narrow sense, many of those bills would be unconstitutional.
So what do you
think? Judiciary bill would be unconstitutional every time it is passed if the court would adopt the change of purpose argument that Legends Bank makes here.
Now, the trial court held that the original purpose of this bill was procurement, and you say that's too narrow of a holding. What do you think the original purpose was?
Well, I think the original purpose of it was to allow statewide elected office holders who are not governed by the statutory provisions concerning competitive bidding to use the Office of Administration's competitive bidding process to avoid the appearance of political conflict. There's no clearer demonstration than that than in the article within the past week attacking the current Attorney General for taking campaign contributions for people who are competitively bidding through OA, even though the Attorney General doesn't have any involvement in selecting it. So that's a clear expression that it has a purpose beyond just procurement. That it has that purpose, which we think then relates to ethics or comes within ethics. That's only important in the change of, or in the single subject area, however. In our view, it's not important in the change of purpose area.
And why is it not important in the change of purpose area again?
Because the original purpose never disappeared.
And the original purpose was an ethics-related purpose, you're saying?
Yes. Well, even if you want to call it procurement, it never changed. What the change of purpose provision does, we think, is it protects the committee system. It talks about an amendment. Amendments are usually, we think of, as something offered on the floor. It's quick passage. Get it done. Commentators to the 1875 Constitution, I believe, said that the change of purpose amendment was intended to see that there was some deliberation about legislation. And I suggest that's to protect the committee system, where the committees can consider combining bills. Combining bills is a common practice. It is not bad per se. If it was, and if it is held to be bad per se, it will shut the legislature down. There is no way, as a practical matter, they can consider 600 different bills.
Now, did I misunderstand? Am I overemphasizing what you said to say we really should adopt a never disappear test for change of purpose?
Yes.
Have we done that before? Have we talked about it in that language?
No. There are some cases and some commentators that do. The Allied case, which is about a 1945 case, comes close, because what the legislature did there, the original bill proposed what in effect would be a tax decrease because of some way deductions were treated. Then the final bill, that disappeared completely, and then the final bill levied a new increase in premium taxes. So it was totally inconsistent. It was a total flop of objective and goal.
Let me go back, and for change in purpose analysis, you would say if we still have the same core that the bill started out, no matter what we add on, it hasn't changed its purpose.
It hasn't changed its purpose. It may violate the single subject rule.
Or clear title.
Or the clear title.
But for change of purpose, it
For
does.
Change of purpose,
Even
it doesn't.
Even though it now goes to 100 other purposes.
Right. Because the alternative is, let's say the judiciary bill, that's one that I'm more familiar with, may have 7 or 8 components. The only way to avoid the change of purpose provision under Legend's analysis is to file the judiciary bill with all of those things in it originally.
If that's what we're after, though, I mean, isn't that part of the art of drafting a title to a bill? That as a legislator, I have the option of titling my bill in a very broad concept that would allow many amendments to be tacked on and have a greater chance of passage in that way. Or I have the choice of a very specific, clear, singular title that if anything else is added on, I can claim you've changed the purpose of my bill and I don't want that.
And there are many, many cases involving that exact situation in Missouri's jurisprudence. They're all single subject cases and not change of purpose cases.
Well, single subject, we've allowed...
You know, broad subject as opposed to narrow subject.
We're really talking about the same thing, just in different places, though. Mm-hmm.
Well,
Whether
I don't think
it's
we're
in
talking...
The title or
that's
the
point I'm trying to make, is they are different things. Why would the constitutional framers provide two different provisions if they intended them to mean the same thing,
right.
which is how they've been treated?
Yeah, they very may have well intended two different things. I guess my question is what's wrong with letting the particular legislator who offers the particular bill decide that, and draft his title in a way that somebody who doesn't like his idea or him personally can't hijack it and pass it in some form that might be unconstitutional, or if it's a friendly bill, if it's something that's that's large and encompass, and he's not trying to get to a particular ill of society, he can draft it large, and that means it gives him the option to include other things under that umbrella to ensure that it's passage. Why wouldn't we want individual
legislators to be able
to guard?
We'd have to change the line of cases that says you can change a title. and
well, not,
and
no, say, no. What I'm suggesting, not that you could change the title, but that when the legislature offered his bill, he could determine how broad or how narrow it was at
right.
the outset, and then live with it, because it would be his bill that he sponsored.
Right,
and
but
he
nobody
thought
else.
People were trying to.
Yeah, but nobody could change the title during the session to add something to it.
Well, isn't that done by the individual legislative body within their own rules? Isn't that a vote by, like, the parliamentarian and the rules committee when they want to change a title on the floor?
On the floor, I think yes.
Go ahead.
I think a committee substitute can do this. We're all, and it isn't pretty sometimes, but I don't even know that the most honest, God-fearing legislative process is ever going to be pretty.
Yeah,
it's just not capable of being pretty.
You point out that Hammerschmidt was the first case that mixed up the concepts of subject and purpose. And so is it your position that we would overrule Hammerschmidt or any of its progeny that use that analysis?
I don't think you have to overrule Hammerschmidt as to the single subject analysis in it.
No, but I mean as far
as to the as to the remedy and the severance, the Blunt case, which it relies on, is not a single subject case, as we pointed out. It's based on an entirely different provision in the Constitution, referendum, and then or initiative, and then an initiative only on a constitutional amendment. It doesn't have a title as such in the same way.
Hammerschmidt, even though it created severability, it didn't apply it.
No.
So was it just dicta anyway?
Well, you know, what severability has done, and I admit it's been a problem, but what it's led to is picking and choosing. One group of lobbyists or special interest groups doesn't like a bill, so they file a Hammerschmidt problem. They say, gotcha, Hammerschmidt. So that you end up in a situation, frankly, and some of you may have been on that panel, I can't remember, I'm sure you were, club executives case, where you said the adult business law was a violation, that was a change of purpose when they added it, and then you put it, because it started out as an alcohol control bill, and then they ended up at the very end putting an adult nightclub provision in it, and put in a footnote, this court did, that, well, nobody raises an objection to the three sex pervert provisions that are in it as well. So that it becomes a pick and choose. It depends on who files the attack. If somebody had filed an attack on the sexual pervert provisions of that bill, then the adult club provisions would have stood. But in any event, the adult club provisions weren't in the title. They weren't anywhere related to the title. Club executives really should have been a single subject provision in our case, in our view.
Any other questions? Thank you, Judge. You may proceed.
I guess I don't need to ask, please, the court, since you already authorized me to proceed. Thank you. Let me just say, this is exciting for me to be here. I appreciate it.
And us too.
What the Attorney General's office is proposing in this case, quite eloquently and in a lovely baritone, is an incredible departure from existing case law. Throwing out Hammerschmidt, conducting a severability analysis at the end that's never been done in a single case, a new original purpose analysis never been done in a single case in this court. It's a pretty extreme proposal, and that's why I find it interesting. It's a very
deference to the author of Hammerschmidt. When I've looked at the Hammerschmidt cases, it's almost like Potter Stewart said of pornography. I know it when I see it. It's just like it's all over, the analysis is all over the place.
And Judge, I want to get to severability, but you asked about EMS, the EMS case, which is City of St. Charles, I believe. And you know that case, and I'm trying to remember what the other one is, where this court has said, you know, at first glance, might not seem obvious that these are all the same subjects. I wanted to answer that because I actually think there is a pretty bright line. Well, maybe not bright.
Well, EMS with the tax and statute. So you could say the TIF part.
Sure. Well, there's a TIF statute that says you can't have a TIF in a flood zone. And Judge Limbaugh said, I call this is my made up, you've never used this language, the sphere of influence analysis. Judge Limbaugh said these TIF zones in a floodplain are set by FEMA. FEMA decides where a floodplain is. FEMA does that to prevent emergencies in floodplains, prevent people from building in floodplains. It's all within the general sphere of influence of emergencies. And I would posit to you that the Trout case, which some of you may recall I argued, uses, although he doesn't say it, happens to be a Limbaugh case again, incidentally, but he doesn't say it, it's another what I would call sphere of influence case. It's not exactly I know it when I see it, but we know that campaign finance, lobbyist registration, some election laws are generally governed by the Ethics Commission. And so Judge Limbaugh said, these are ethics. Now, as you know, I thought that title was unclear, and with all respect to this court, I still think the title Ethics asks for trouble, which is the exact title we have of this bill, by the way. But that's the sphere of influence. If I can, I want to make sure, I fear we've missed what the severability analysis is in Hammerschmidt, and then followed in Rizzo in 2006, and followed in SSM Cardinal Glennon. Because it's not as simple as skipping to 1.140. The analysis says, when this court concludes that a bill contains more than one subject, the entire bill is unconstitutional, unless the court is convinced beyond reasonable doubt that one of the bill's multiple subjects is its original controlling purpose and that the other subject is not. Beyond a reasonable doubt, says Hammerschmidt, you have to find that one of the subjects was the original controlling purpose. Exact same analysis repeated in
Where
Rizzo.
Where does that standard come from in the Constitution about?
I have no idea. I agree with Judge Fisher. That analysis is announced in Hammerschmidt. It refers back to the Blunt case. When you read the Blunt case, you can't figure out where it came from. I think it comes from this court's well-founded tenet that you should try to uphold statutory and legislative enactments whenever you can. This court goes out of its way to do that, and you should. But when you're faced with an unconstitutional bill, the bill is unconstitutional. The Constitution of 1865 contained a severability analysis. It was removed, as we point out in our brief. We think that's significant. The people of the state of Missouri adopted the Constitution of 1875. Incidentally, I was reading a Judge Welliver dissent last night in a case that's not cited by anyone in these briefs, and I may not be right in my history of this court, but I believe Judge Welliver may be the only former legislator who sat on this court. And Judge Welliver, in dissent in one of these cases, said...
Judge White,
I'm sorry. Absolutely, of course, Judge White. Judge Welliver said, Judge Welliver wants me to say he was in the Senate, though, I'm sure. Judge Welliver said, this constitutional prohibition on multiple subjects and original purpose, it isn't a judicially created thing. This is a limitation imposed by the people of the state of Missouri on the legislature. It should be enforced, and it should be enforced to the letter. And I think that, you know, balancing this concept, we're not going to throw it out unless we absolutely positively have to. But on the other hand, it is this restriction. Led us to this Hammerschmidt pronouncement. But let's not lose fact of how strong that test has been throughout this court. Unless you find beyond a reasonable doubt that there is an original controlling purpose. And in reading through the briefs again to prepare for oral argument, we may not have emphasized that point enough to you. We have a disagreement about what the original controlling purpose was. I say that you should look at the language of the bill, and that's the only evidence you can really consider. Look at the title, which says to amend Chapter 37, which is
administration. Why do you look at the title as opposed to the substance of what the provisions of the bill are trying to get to?
You look at both. That's all you have. The Attorney General asks you, I believe, to posit what the purpose of the legislature was, and I think that's always going to be a mistake. Looking at the title, though, because you're trying to interpret what the purpose of an individual legislator...
Can you not infer an ethics-related purpose to competitive bidding?
I don't see it as any more than any bill has an ethics-related purpose.
What is the purpose of competitive bidding?
What is to procure goods, and it's a procedure.
With that cronyism and at the reasonable price, right?
Well, apparently it didn't work because the Post-Dispatch still says it's cronyism, even though the law was passed.
So what do you think the original purpose, I'm sorry, what do you think the original purpose of this bill was?
The original bill was a procedure for procurement of goods and services. It was ethics neutral.
All right. And so isn't that language contained in the final truly agreed to and finally passed bill?
It is.
So Why can't that subject then survive severability?
It could. It could.
And that's what the trial court found.
That's what the trial court found. The trial court used a multiple subject analysis. There's no transcript, but interestingly enough, I spent most of my time arguing original purpose. The trial court actually said, well, I'm trying to guess what the legislator's purpose was. I can't do that, which I thought was an interesting comment that I'd never
But I thought your of. Argument from your brief was that if there is a multiple subject, that there is no severability and the whole bill fails. The whole bill is considered unconstitutional.
Well, that's one. I mean, we have alternative arguments. So if you have multiple subjects, I'm sorry, Judge, can I go back just on original purpose?
Oh, sure.
Follow the analysis in Stroh Brewery. I'm not advocating some incredibly limited original purpose analysis. The Stroh Brewery case, I think, does a great job, found no violation of original purpose. And it said, look at the title and look at the subject. But just because it says related to vintage wine, let's not get too hung up on related to vintage wine. Look at the entire title. That bill happened to be to amend Chapter 311 by adding a section related to vintage wine. Well, Chapter 311 is liquor control. Sphere of influence is the way I like to think of it. So when we added other provisions that were not vintage wine, we go back and we consider the title of the bill, the contents, to see what they were really doing. If you do that here, what you find is Chapter 37, which is the Department of Administration. It's about forms management. It's about automated phone systems. It's about, and then it includes this little procurement thing that doesn't require OA, and we make this point in the Statement of Facts, doesn't require OA to select or to write the bidding. It still lets the Attorney General make the decision. It's just procedural. Judge, what we're arguing on the multiple subject is if you use the traditional Hammerschmidt, Rizzo, SSM, Cardinal Glennon analysis, when you find multiple subjects, and I can go through that if the court would like, then what do you do? Then what do you do? And what I think all those cases say, I read it to you, is go back to the original purpose. It's like when my 10-year-old loses her shoes. I say, let's go back and figure out where we went wrong. And the reason the court does that, I think, although no one's ever articulated this, is that you're trying to uphold legislative intent. So you know you've got an unconstitutional bill. Well, let's see if we can uphold some of it, if you want to engage in that errand, and figure out what the real intent of the legislature was. And this is one of the problems with severability analysis, I think, because you can never know whether the Senate would have passed without the House version or the House would have passed with the Senate version. But you go back to the original purpose. So what you would do in this case is you would assume that the bill as introduced was constitutional. If you can make that conclusion, you start there. Then there was an amendment added. It was keys to the Capitol dome. I think we've all conceded that's an excess, comes out. What was the next amendment that was added? It was another procurement amendment. Okay, consistent. What was the next amendment that was added? Campaign finance, PAC-to-PAC transfers. Incidentally, even if you adopt the idea that the procurement provisions somehow related to ethical conduct of elected officials, I still don't understand how regulating a PAC-to-PAC transfer or doing away with the Democratic committee in St. Louis County had anything to do with elected official conduct. I think we're getting pretty attenuated. But I think that's what Hammerschmidt stands for. That's what Rizzo stands for. That's what SSM Cardinal
stands for. So you're saying under
that
ground, the difference between you, at least on one level, is what was the original purpose? Do you look at procurement? Do you look at ethics? How do you determine that? And that's for this court to...
Yeah, that's one of the issues, and I think I can put it very simply, Judge. I believe you should be... you should look at the content of the bill and try to determine what original purpose was, and that's really it. And I believe, with all respect, the Attorney General's arguing for some sort of extrapolation. Well, what do we think they might have been doing with this bill?
And if we accept your argument, then that's it, it's out? And if we disagree with your argument, then you have a second level of argument?
That's correct.
Which is
I might have lost you, Judge. Sorry. I was trying to think through the various steps there.
Okay. Say if we accepted opposing counsel's view that it was ethics and it's broad and rejected your argument that it's gone too far afield,
okay,
then you still think it's invalid because...
Yes. So then you have keys to the Capitol dome, which have been admitted and which, as I hope we point out, is a classic log-rolling example. I'm trying to figure out how to organize this. Mr. Hollinger's pointed out to you that, you know, well, we pick on Keith's capital. People could pick and choose the various provisions. Mm-hmm. I think we solved that with Judge Fisher's suggestion, which is nobody will pick and choose. I won't be here trying to manipulate the process and get this thrown out or that thrown out if you say Bill's gone altogether. That's the way to solve that problem.
And that could have been the mistake of the original Hammersmith case. If they'd have done it in 1994, we'd have a whole lot less of these cases since I've been here.
Could have been. And I'm coming back, Judge, I promise.
We don't want to entirely get rid of the concept of severability, then what's your argument?
Yeah, so if you don't want to get rid of the entire concept of severability, the concept articulated in Hammersmith, Rizzo, SSM, Cardinal Glennon makes perfect sense. You return to the original. What doesn't make sense, and this case is a classic example, is to look at the final title of the bill. Because go read the conclusion of the Attorney General's brief, which asks you to sever the original purpose. You look at the final title of the bill, which is ethics, so go sever the procurement stuff. Go sever the keys to the Capitol, which were added in the Senate in the earliest versions. That's an absurd result.
Well, his argument is that, you know, the goal is to prevent log rolling and to keep the average citizen informed of what the bill is about.
Right.
So why not look at the title as it stands, you know, late in the session to see, you know, does this
right.
cover the subject that the title says it covers?
And Judge, the purpose of the multiple subject prohibition is to prevent log rolling. I don't think that's the purpose of the severability analysis. I think the purpose of the severability now, I don't think log rolling, once you've decided you have a log rolled bill, we're done. Now we're talking about just severability analysis.
Well, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about clear title. And why don't you look at the title that was passed and see if it's clear? And why would you look at an earlier title?
For multiple subjects, you do that. For severability, there's not a case that starts with title.
Well, that has nothing to do with severability. It doesn't have to do with title. I mean, then you're dealing with you sever things that don't relate to the title. That's what.
That's the Attorney General's position.
Versus you're saying what?
I'm saying you go back to original purpose and work your way forward because you have a bill that is unconstitutional. That has nothing to do with title, though, does it?
That has to do with maybe changing purposes and
well, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm not articulating myself very well.
This whole area is unclear, so I realize it's a lot of questions, but I'm trying to kind of get a framework so we can.
So here's what I think on that. If you reach, let's say in this case you have reached the conclusion that this is an unconstitutional bill.
On what ground, you're saying?
Pick one. Multiple subjects might be the easiest.
Okay.
So you have a bill here that you think has more than one subject in it. The Constitution says that title shall state the subject.
And why would you look at the original subject versus the later subject? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Original. Well, so the title's wrong. In my bill that has multiple subjects, the title is wrong. It does not contain a single subject clearly expressed because there's more than one subject. So your title's wrong, too. So you're faced with a wholly unconstitutional bill now, as Hammerschmidt says. So that's why I don't think it's appropriate to look at that final title, and I agree with the Hammerschmidt analysis. I hope I'm answering your question.
But you're saying even if the title accurately reflects one of two subjects in the bill, you nonetheless have to throw out the whole thing? Or you have to go back and I just don't know why you
don't
go back and look at the original title. I'm not clear where that comes from.
Trying to find legislative intent.
At the time it was introduced.
Trying to figure out, again, where the legislature went wrong. So you start with at the time it was introduced. If you've got an unconstitutional bill at the time it was introduced, which is possible, I suppose, then the whole bill's unconstitutional. But what the Hammerschmidt court said is go back and try to figure out what the original purpose was. And, I mean, they don't explain why. I mean, this is my theory on why you would do that. You go back and find the original purpose because we're assuming that's constitutional, and then you retrace the violation of the Constitution occurred when someone offered an amendment at some point. And that's what we're trying to find. And that's why we go back and go forward. Of course, as I've said, I think it's hard to do because you don't know what would have happened if you can't really put all that toothpaste back. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just a couple of short things in response. You look at the title of the bill as finally passed because the Constitution says you do.
It just says which shall be clearly expressed in the title. It doesn't say the title of the
Why would you look at Well, first of all, we slide right by that problem. Is we're looking at title to see if it's single subject. Then when we get to the severance issue, we're going to look at purpose. Why wouldn't we be looking at subject? And so that you would split off subjects rather than purpose. That's equating the two and saying they're the same two things. Let me go back to my example. If the judiciary bill frequently starts out as lots of single bills, some of them deal with execution, some of them deal with court costs, some of them will deal with procedure, there's probably 10, 20 different pieces of legislation that are introduced. And what generally happens is those that survive the committee process and all of the arguments and so forth are combined into a judiciary bill that is then voted on. That bill would be unconstitutional under Legends Bank's view. If somebody filed a lawsuit against the executions portion and says, hey, that was added on in the process, that's a different subject.
But why wouldn't that still be under the umbrella judiciary?
Because you don't look at the umbrella judiciary. He says you look at the original purpose. Well, and the original purpose was
well, I think he's saying there's just two different analyses. I think he agrees with you on that. It's two different clauses. It's two different analysis. It's just an issue.
But it would also violate the change of purpose because you would have changed the purpose. The only way to avoid
if the original purpose was the repeal and enactment of legislation that affects the administration of justice and the courts. Now, why wouldn't all those things that you said fit within that umbrella?
In terms of the subject?
No, I'm in terms of the purpose. And then we can talk about subject. But I'd do them twice, like you suggest. I think it might be twice.
Well, purpose is an objective. It's not just a subject. And what you talked about was what you said respectfully was a subject, a bill to amend certain provisions relating to the judiciary. That's a subject. It's not a purpose.
Well,
purpose is an objective or a goal.
The purpose is to repeal or enact legislation that affects the administration of justice and the courts.
I still don't see that as a purpose.
You see, purpose has to be more focused, like to improve the criminal laws or to change the laws regarding execution or change the laws regarding the regarding warrants.
I mean, that's what each one of those individual bills has as a purpose. To change the laws regarding executions or change the law regarding time for this procedure.
Under that approach, wouldn't all those omnibus bills be bad?
Because absolutely.
Why is that not the case, though? You're not saying they're bad.
I'm saying that will be the result. What will happen is a rush of additional litigation.
So what are you saying?
Attacking every combination bill. Maybe not on Hammersmith grounds now, but maybe on change of purpose grounds.
And so why and how does your interpretation avoid that?
Because in my interpretation, the original purpose did not change. It was left in the bill. If you'll notice, somebody really caught on to that during this process. When it went to the House and the committee substitute put the provisions in on ethics, it took out the original 844 dealing with statewide elected officials. What happened when I got back to the Senate? Bam, they popped that right in, back right away, because they knew that that was the original purpose of that bill. And they couldn't take that out.
I'd like to ask a question which would give you an opportunity to address the issue of how whether or not this legislation, beyond a reasonable doubt, under the Hammersmith cases, assuming that Hammersmith isn't tinkered with at all, explain to me how this legislation passes that muster.
You can't say that. You want me to assume also that ethics wasn't part of the purpose of the original bill?
I feel like I took up a lot of your time with my questions. I'm trying to give you an opportunity.
Yeah. Well, if ethics was part of the original purpose of the bill, then that stands. The state contracting thing, that's just ordinary straight-ahead procurement bill, and the keys to the dome, they would fall by the wayside. The ethics provision would stand. We talk about log rolling being a purpose. I think we have to examine and see what we think happened too, And surely Legends doesn't suggest that the ethics provisions in this bill were added to get to the keys of the dome capital passed. Because that's the effect of their argument. They say the log rolling is the thing added at the end to get everybody together. And surely they didn't add this big ethics bill onto a state printing procurement bill to get the state procurement bill passed. Thank you.
Thank you. An excellent argument by two fine advocates, Judge Hollinger and former General Hedgehog.